Please let us sit in silence and listen to the prelude which Jamie will play. It is Herr Christ, der Heng Gottensong by J. Bach. J. S. Bach. Lord Christ, the only Son of God. Tena koutou Unitarians, o tāmaki makaura. Tena koutou ngā manuhiri. Ko tuku I Noa Shireen Caldwell, no Okutipuna, England and New Zealand. Ke te noho au ki tāmaki makaura, Auckland. Tena koutou, tena koutou, tena koutou katoa. Welcome to our Auckland Unitarian Church. Welcome all fellow church members and visitors. Welcome if you join us via Zoom or physically present in the church building where Auckland Unitarians have gathered since 1901. Welcome to people joining us remotely in our building and to those who may view our service online at a later time. All services are available on our website. If you are a first-time visitor, welcome, Jamie. You are twice welcome. Thank you for choosing to share this time with us in our free and responsible search for truth and meaning. For those who join us in the physical church, please join us for tea and coffee after the service. It is our sacrament of hospitality. My name is Shireen Caldwell. Our church has been my sanctuary for over 40 years. Our speaker today is John Maindonald, who is joining us remotely from Wellington. John is a personal friend who also joined the church in the early 1980s, about the same time. John spoke on Zoom a few weeks ago in part one of his exploration of some of Charles Darwin's life and works. Today, John will share part two, titled Charles Darwin's Religious Life Journey. I now invite Leo to come and help me to read our opening words together. Welcome, who come in friendship, who long for genuine community.
May you be graciously received here as your authentic self.
Welcome, who come in curiosity, full of question or simply open.
May you embrace wonder and encounter new delights.
Welcome, who come heavy with fatigue, weary from the troubles of the world or the troubles of your particular life.
May you rest and be filled in this sacred space.
Welcome, who come with joy for flowing rivers and gentle breeze, for changing skies and for great trees.
May the grace of the world leave a lasting imprint in you.
Welcome, who come with thanks and the gift of human care.
May your grateful heart overflow and bless those around you.
Come. Let us celebrate together this wondrous life.
These chalice lighting words come from Albert Schweitzer. In fact, he was really instrumental in a funny way of me joining this church. I crept in when I heard this wonderful organ playing, and the doors were closed, but there was a photograph of Albert Schweitzer on the back wall in the foyer, and I was busy reading it, and the door opened, and I thought, oh no, I've been caught, having not been inside a church for about 20 years. So here is Albert Schweitzer. At times, our own light goes out and is rekindled by a spark from another person. Each of us has cause to think with deep gratitude of those who have lighted the flame within us.
Would you please stand as you're able and recite the covenant with me, which will now go up on the screen.
Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest for truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge and freedom, to serve humankind in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow in harmony. Thus do we covenant with each other and with our God.
Jamie will now play Fugue in B minor by Bach.
Thank you.
reading this morning is chosen by our speaker, John. The words of this lyrics are those of the Green MP, Dr. Lawrence Junan, and he sang these at the start of his maiden speech in Parliament this year. Excuse me. Ain't scented like a flower, ain't tall like a tree, I'm just a blade of grass that nobody knows. But I ain't ever lonely, I ain't ever worried. Look, my companions are all around the globe. Spring wind, oh spring wind, you make me greener. Sunshine, oh sunshine, you shine your light on me. Rivers, oh valleys, you have nourished me. Great earth, oh mother, you embrace me tightly. Dr. Junan says that it is a song that he grew up with, and it is the last song that his paternal grandmother sang to him. He said, I share it with you all as a reminder of the relationship that we have with each other and the relationship we have with our environment. I will now introduce our speaker for this morning. As I mentioned in John's last talk, his involvement with our church goes back to about 1984. Over the years, John has been a regular participant in several volunteer positions in our church. And he now speaks to us from Wellington via Zoom. And the title of his talk is Charles Darwin's Religious Life.
Three weeks ago, we looked at the manner in which, from a very privileged position in society, Darwin was able to gain the knowledge and skills that fitted him to work as naturalist on the British Admiralty ship, the Beagle. We saw how this passionate student of nature felt forced to the conclusion that a common evolutionary origin for all living things was needed to explain his observations. Over the years 1831 to 1836, while he moved from place to place on the Beagle, he remained a relatively orthodox Anglican, sometimes laughed at by the sailors when he quoted the Bible as a source of authority on a point of morality. Referring to the time October 1936 through to the time of his marriage in January 1839, he wrote in his later private autobiography, during these 2 years, I was led to think much about religion. By further reflecting that the clearest evidence would be requisite to make any sane man believe in the miracles by which Christianity is supported, that the more we know of the fixed laws of nature, the more incredible do miracles become. That the men at that time were ignorant and credulous, to a degree almost incomprehensible by us. That the Gospels cannot be proved to have been written simultaneously with the events. That they differ in many important details, far too important as it seemed to me to be admitted as the usual inaccuracies of eyewitnesses. By such reflections as these, I gradually came to disbelieve in Christianity as a divine revelation. Beautiful as the morality of the New Testament is, it can hardly be denied that its perfection depends in part on the interpretation which we now put on metaphors and allegories. But, he says, I was very unwilling to give up my belief. I feel sure of this, for I can well remember often and often inventing daydreams of old letters between distinguished Romans and manuscripts being discovered at Pompeii or elsewhere, which confirmed in the most striking manner all that was written in the Gospels. Thus, disbelief crept over me at a very slow rate, but was at last complete. As we saw last week, the Darwin and Wedgwood families maintained from the time of Darwin's maternal and paternal grandfathers close connections. The Wedgwoods were Unitarians. Darwin's Unitarian cousin Emma, to whom he found himself attracted after his return, was strong in her Unitarian Christian belief. Darwin proposed to her a couple of months before they were married, at the same time explaining to her that he had abandoned Christian belief. She wrote to him in words that show a remarkable sense of feeling. "My reason tells me that honest and conscientious doubts cannot be a sin, but I feel it would be a painful void between us. I thank you from my heart for your openness with me, and I should dread the feeling that you were concealing your opinions from fear of giving me pain. My own dear Charlie, we now do belong to each other, and I cannot help being open with you." She comes across as a person with a strong religious commitment, but at the same time concerned to go where her reason takes her. She had not faced the same exposure to skeptical and rationalist thinking as Darwin. Most women at that time were largely shielded from the intellectual currents of the places where their menfolk trained and worked and met for discussion. Emma and Darwin read together and discussed books both defending and criticizing orthodoxy. While her thinking did over time move in a more free-thinking direction, she continued to attend and take her children to the Anglican Church in Down, 28 kilometres southeast of London's Victoria Station, where she and Charles had moved after their marriage. She and later their children read and critiqued everything that Darwin wrote. Darwin had continuing bouts of serious illnesses from causes which are unknown, but there have been various guesses. The help and remarkable care that Emma gave him contributed in no small way to his work and writing. For the most part, Darwin kept his religious beliefs to himself. He wanted his work to be judged on its scientific merits and not mixed up with arguments about religion and God. An 1866 response to an inquiry about his religious beliefs was typical. "My opinion is not worth any more than that of any other man who has thought on such subjects. I thank you for your judgment and honour you for it, that theology and science should each run its own course." In his autobiography, in fact, in the part that was not published in full until 1958, he wrote, "Another source of conviction in the existence of God, connected with the reason and not with the feelings, follows from the extreme difficulty, or rather impossibility, of conceiving this immense and wonderful universe, including man with his capacity of looking far backwards and far into futurity as the result of blind chance or necessity. But then arises the doubt, can the mind of man, which has, as I fully believe, been developed from a mind as low as that possessed by the lowest animal, be trusted when it draws such grand conclusions? I cannot pretend to throw the least light on such abstruse problems. The mystery of the beginning of all things is insoluble by us, and I, for one, must be content to remain agnostic." To the extent that Darwin thought God in some sense a possibility, it was not the God of Christian theology. He wrote to the American botanist Asa Gray in 1860, "I am bewildered. I had no intention to write atheistically, but I own that I cannot see as plain as others do, and as I should wish to do, evidence of design and beneficence on all sides of us. There seems to me too much misery in the world. I cannot persuade myself that a beneficent and omnipotent God would have designedly created the Ichneumonidae, that's a family of wasps, with the express intention of their feeding within the living bodies of caterpillars. Not just caterpillars, incidentally, they feed into all sorts of things. In an 1879 letter to John Fordyce, he wrote, "My judgment often fluctuates. Whether a man deserves to be called a theist depends on the definition of the term. In my most extreme fluctuations, I have never been an atheist in the sense of denying the existence of a God. I think that generally, and more as I grow older, but not always, that an agnostic would be the most correct description of my state of mind." Darwin's musings align with my own thinking. Consciousness is, in one or another way, a built-in part of our universe. Was a conscious entity the starting point for what may well be a universe of universes? Or was what we call matter the starting point? Did matter somehow just appear that carried within it the potential to create, by the slow process of evolution, conscious human beings? I have to agree with Darwin that the mystery of the beginning of all things is insoluble by us. It's one thing to reject traditional Christianity. It's another to replace it as a source of guidance for life and living. In 1871, Francis Ellingham Abbott, a US Unitarian minister and leading figure in the US Free Religious Association that had been formed a few years earlier, sent Darwin a copy of his pamphlet, Truths for the Times. Truths for the Times was in two parts, one titled Modern Principles and the other titled 50 Affirmations. Its flavour can be judged from the following selection. First, religion is the effort of man to perfect himself. Two, the root of religion is universal human nature. Number eight, the unity of all religions must be sought in their universal element. And the final one, number 50, Christianity is the faith of the soul's childhood. Free religion is the faith of the soul's manhood. In the gradual growth of mankind out of Christianity into free religion lies the only hope of the spiritual perfection of the individual and of the spiritual unity of the race. That'd be a great point for discussion, wouldn't it? The modern principles emphasize the supremacy of liberty in all matters of government, the supremacy of science in all matters of belief, the supremacy of morality in all matters of conduct, and the supremacy of benevolence in all social and personal relations. Darwin wrote back with words that when he agreed for them to be printed in successive copies of the Free Religious Association weekly publication, The Index, were amended to read, "I have now read Truths for the Times, and I admire them from my inmost heart, and I agree to almost every word." Although at the time the Free Religious Association represented a break in a radical direction from the American Unitarian Association at that time, it set a direction in which the association would move in the following century. A side note is that I found a copy of Truths for the Times online when I looked for it several years ago in the online pamphlet collection of Sir Robert Stout at Victoria University of Wellington. Stout was Premier of New Zealand from 1884 to 1887, and later Chief Justice from 1899 to 1926. He was active in Wellington Unitarian Church from the time it started and president for a number of years prior to his death in 1930. Stout comes across to me as a person who was much in Abbott's line of thinking. Darwin thought deeply about motives for life and living. In his autobiography, he wrote, "A man who has no assured and ever-present belief in the existence of a personal God or of a future existence with retribution and reward can have for his rule of life, as far as I can see, only to follow those impulses and instincts which are the strongest, which seem to him the best ones. If he acts for the good of others, he will receive the approbation of his fellow men and gain the love of those with whom he lives. And this latter gain undoubtedly is the highest pleasure on this earth. His reason may occasionally tell him to act in opposition to the opinion of others, whose approbation he will then not receive, but he will still have the solid satisfaction of knowing that he has followed his innermost guide or conscience." Darwin is surely optimistic about the direction of social influences. They depend a lot on the company we keep, and they push as often in malign as in socially positive directions. Darwin went on to say in a very reflective mode, "As for myself, I believe that I have acted rightly in steadily following and devoting my life to science. I feel no remorse at having committed any great sin, but have often and often regretted that I have not done more direct good to my fellow creatures. My sole and poor excuse is much ill health and my mental constitution, which makes it extremely difficult for me to turn from one subject or occupation to another. I can imagine with high satisfaction giving up my whole time to philanthropy, but not a portion of it, though this would have been a far better line of conduct." Rachel asked us to think about our laments and joys last week, both for ourselves and for the wider community. Today's questions build on Darwin's musings to ask closely related questions. What do you see as your rule of life? Thank you.
Thank you, John. Much food for thought. Our closing words are the ones that I used the last time that John spoke, but I think they're worth repeating here. They come from Deborah Hefner from our worship web, the UUA worship web. "As we enter another week of uncertainty in the world, let us remember that there is only one side, that of humanity and planet Earth. May we pray for peace. May we raise our voices with our elected officials and engage as we can in acts of resistance. And may we remember to take very good care." Would you please join me in saying the words to extinguish the chalice? "We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again." First of all, our postlude.
group discussion question this morning, it's going to be a bit of a challenge, I think. So could we please go into groups of four or five, and we'll put the question up on the screen. There's a slip of the tongue, so used to being a teacher for 30 years. So there's our question, folks. So into small groups, and say about 15 minutes.